I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, we review some of the most important stories about religion, faith, and spirituality from 2008, from the Reverend Jeremiah Wright to Rick Warren to a kosher meatpacking plant accused of exploiting immigrant workers. That's in just a few minutes. But we start with the changing face of Congress. President-elect Barack Obama is not the only one who'll have a change of address this year. There are 63 new members of the House of Representatives, and one of them is Democrat Jim Himes of Connecticut. He's a Rhodes Scholar, a former investment banker, and the director of an affordable housing organization. And last fall, he won what some considered an improbable victory against the 10-term incumbent Republican Christopher Shays. Congressman-elect Jim Himes will be representing Connecticut's 4th District when he's sworn in next week, and he's joining us now. Welcome and Happy New Year to you.
Well, Happy New Year to you.
And I'm not sure if is it congratulations or condolences in order here.
Because yeah, I hear a little bit of each, but I got to tell you, I'm hugely excited. I think the country's turned a corner, and it's up to guys like me and Congress and the new president to make sure we seize this moment to start turning the country around.
What do you think your main job is at this point? Is it to keep up the enthusiasm, or is it to temper expectations about what you can actually do?
Well, I think the main job isn't about messaging. The main job is about the economy. I mean, I don't go anywhere. I'm not out of my door an hour before I hear a story of someone who has lost their job or a family that is at risk of having their home foreclosed. So I think we are going to see the next, starting Tuesday, when I and the rest of the Congress are sworn in, I think we are going to see a real scramble to put together a stimulus package, which we all hope and had better really help turn this economy around. I think, expectations, beliefs, hope, everything else, it is all going to ride on whether we can begin the process of turning this economy around.
You have a very unique vantage point on this question, actually, as a former investment banker and a person who now works, who has been working over the last couple of years in affordable housing. So it seems to me that you've kind of seen this from both ends of the spectrum, as it were. I'd like to ask two things. First of all, what do you think is responsible? What do you think are the major factors responsible for the conditions that we are now in? Because as you know, of course, there are a lot of interpretations of this. And the second, and of course, I have a follow-up.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, it's a tough question to answer because, of course, so much of the political dialogue, particularly during the campaign, focused on precisely that question, who is responsible? And everybody had their one answer to that. And the reality is that we collectively and our institutions and the private sector and the government's failure of regulatory diligence and others, there blame lies in a whole lot of places. Look, at some level for generations now, we have said as a society that we should put a very high value on home ownership. And that's right. That's right. I mean, communities where people own their own homes are good, solid, stable communities. On the other hand, as we've learned now, much to our peril, and frankly, which I saw when we were moving people from rental affordable housing to owned affordable housing, the reality is that you need a pretty good cushion of assets, and you need a certain ability to, if nothing else, replace the boiler when it blows if you own your own home, because the super's not going to do it for you. So we collectively as a society have said we're going to put a huge value on home ownership, and we structured a lot of our government programs and tax breaks to make that possible. Now, that's a good thing. We may have leaned a little too far in that direction, but then you combine that with the subprime mortgage brokers, with the complexity with which Wall Street bundled these new securities, with the fact that the government really took the referee off the field. You put all that stuff together and you get what is unquestionably the worst financial crisis that we've seen in generations.
Do you think that we are over-invested in housing in this country?
Well, I think in the near term, there's no question about that. I mean, we just got through a really ugly housing bubble, and that is, in some senses, the definition of overinvestment. And we're paying the price right now. And unfortunately, when I say we're paying the price, I very literally mean that. The benefits of the bubble really went to a fairly narrow slice of our society and of our population. But as we're all learning now, as we talk about these huge bailouts, and as we reflect on the amount of money that we are going to spend and frankly should spend on the stimulus, but what that means in terms of the debt that we will subsequently carry, we're all bearing the burden for, a process that unfortunately on the way up didn't benefit as many people as it should have.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're speaking with Congressman-elect Jim Himes about his new job representing Connecticut's 4th District in the U.S. Congress, and we're talking a lot about his former jobs as an investment banker for Goldman Sachs and as a head of an affordable housing organization and the insights that he gained from those jobs in addressing the number one issue for the country right now, which is, of course, the economy. The $700 billion bailout plan, which was passed by your soon-to-be predecessors. A lot of people already feel the taxpayers aren't getting any value out of this or aren't getting full value out of the money already spent. What do you think the priority should be for the incoming Congress and President-elect Obama? What are the first steps that you think he needs to take in either fixing what's already broken, or what are the next steps in any kind of stimulus package should be? What are the pillars?
Yeah, I guess I'd say probably three things. First, there's broad agreement, and certainly I'm on the same page, that we do need a stimulus package, which is going to put Americans back to work. And, you know, this legislation is being drafted right now. When we're sworn in next Tuesday, I think we'll be presented with some draft legislation, and I know that the president-elect is hell-bent on getting this pushed through quickly, and he's right about that. Stimulus must be timely. It must be quick. So I think that will be important, and we need to all keep in the back of our minds here that we're doing something that in the near term is probably the right thing to do, but in the long term is going to add to our debt, and we should just reflect on that. Secondly, you know, as we move through this stuff and as we deal with the largest appropriation in the history of mankind, we can't forget that we need to revisit the regulatory structure which sits on top of our financial services industry, our banks, our mortgage brokers, our investment banks, our hedge funds. You know, one of the very big reasons we are where we are is because that regulatory structure was effectively dismantled over the last 10 years just as that industry grew. Now, it sounds crazy to say it given where we are, but we want a vibrant financial services industry in this country. We don't want it in London. We don't want it in Hong Kong. We want it right here. But we want it here operating safely, you know, not ever again putting us in the position of having to put billions of dollars of taxpayer money on the table. So that's number two. We must do that right out of the box. Think about how we put in place the right and smart regulatory structure. And third, we've got the long-term, you use the word pillars, the long-term pillars of stability in our economy, our educational system, the fact that we have promised something like $43 trillion in Social Security and Medicare benefits that are unfunded. You know, our educational system isn't what it should be. Our unfunded liabilities in Social Security and Medicare are just staggering. When investors, when people look at these things, they say, what does the future of the United States economy look like? And when they look at those two things in particular, and by the way, throw in healthcare and our, you know, crazy healthcare system, people just say, this doesn't give me a lot of confidence. So I think, you know, those three things, the stimulus, the regulation, and then, you know, really addressing the long-term sources of American wealth are critical.
Can we talk a little bit about you for a minute? And in addition to your financial background, you've also got an interesting personal background that a lot of people have noticed, that you spent part of your childhood in Peru and in Colombia. You are fluent in Spanish. You are not Latino, but you're fluent in Spanish. And some people, first of all, I wonder how that your background, the way you grew up, how do you think it influences your worldview and how you'll operate as a politician at this interesting time in our history? And secondly, there's been some talk of your joining the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, and I wonder if you are going to do that.
Yeah, Michelle, I spent the first 10 years roughly of my life in South America. My father was a Ford Foundation executive working on development in Peru and Colombia. And so, yes, I am fluent in Spanish. You know, when I got into this a year and a half ago, thinking about running for Congress, one of the reasons I did run was I thought, you know, the people of this district, the Latino population, which is quite substantial in Fairfield County, Connecticut, they've never been presented with a congressional candidate who could give a speech in Spanish. And I thought if I could be part of helping to mobilize the Latino community and get them more engaged in the civic life of the country, that in and of itself would be a pretty good thing. So that was terrific. I really enjoyed that. In terms of how it, you know, affects my worldview, I was 10 years old when I came to this country from a country where, you know, there were soldiers on street corners with machine guns, and they weren't there to protect people. They were there to protect the government. And so as a 10-year-old getting here and seeing a country where, you know, you could say nasty things about the President of the United States, where, you know, an opposition was not just tolerated but welcomed as a key part of the system, that was a pretty amazing thing for a young guy to see. And I think it probably gave me maybe an intense appreciation of these things that are guaranteed in the Bill of Rights that I would argue have been pretty badly eroded in the last 8 years.
What about the Congressional Hispanic Caucus? Is it true you're asking to join? You'd like to join?
No, you know, I haven't actually had any conversations about it. They haven't asked me to. I think the Congressional Hispanic Caucus is largely made up of people who self-identify as Latinos, which is a guy named James Andrew Himes. I don't. I obviously have a lot of love for the culture and speak the language and whatnot, but I don't sort of carry the cultural or historical experience of being a Latino. So not sure, but.
But what about that question though? I mean, is should these caucuses be about who you are or about what you care about?
Well, I think both, and I think you see that reflected in the caucuses. You know, I've actually asked to join the Congressional Arts Caucus, which I think is a terrific outfit. You know, advocating for better art. But then you've got the Congressional Black Caucus and the Latino Caucus, who are saying, hey, we should come together across party lines to think about the unique problems that we as a group of people have. So democracy is a big, complex, and sometimes messy thing. And I think people coming together along lines of shared interests is generally a good idea.
I have one final and difficult question for you, which is, while you were at Harvard, you were captain of the lightweight crew team. I see that Cornell has won the Lightweight Intercollegiate Rowing Association the last 3 years. Harvard hasn't won the title since 2003. What's going on there?
Wow, you are far more up on this stuff than I am. I'll tell you I thought about this just yesterday when I did something I never should have done, which is stand on a scale, and I realized, oh my God, I am 20 pounds past ever being a lightweight again.
So you have no insights to offer there.
No insights at all.
Probably discretion is probably the better part of valor. So Congressman-elect Jim Himes will represent Connecticut's 4th District when he's sworn in to the 111th Congress next week. He was kind enough to join us from Fairfield, Connecticut. Congressman-elect, thank you so much for speaking with us, and Happy New Year again.
Thank you, Michelle. Happy New Year to you and all your listeners.